So my name's Jaron Babbage. I work in the Azure business here at Microsoft New Zealand, and I got the pleasure of kicking off this week talking about Azure and the enterprise. You know, essentially what I wanted to cover off with you this morning was more of a general overview, I guess, in terms of the Azure platform. A little bit about what goes on behind the scenes in terms of how we run the platform, some of the capabilities there. Talk a little bit about what you can use it for. There's two main parts of the platform around infrastructure and platform as a service, so I'll sort of touch on a lot of those capabilities. Weave in a few demos for you as well, so it's not just all PowerPoint at this time of the morning. And then I'll sort of finish up talking around where you can start with the platform. So sort of four areas that we think is kind of the entry point to when you start thinking about moving towards cloud services. So in terms of, you know, infrastructure today, we've obviously got our on-premise infrastructure. You know, virtualization, that we've done a great job of virtualizing our environments today. You know, we're one of the most highly virtualized countries in the world. So we've really achieved a lot of benefit out of virtualization, the cost savings and agility that could lead. But there's also now what's next. We find a lot of our customers now starting to get constrained in the infrastructure they're actually operating on today. Perhaps they can't move fast enough, they can't provision infrastructure quick enough that the business needs. It's starting to get kind of expensive versus other cost models in terms of how we run those infrastructure today. So that's really where we see public cloud services starting to play a part in this, is how it can start to extend out and take advantage of things like infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. So, you know, generally most organizations are starting to take that first step towards infrastructure service. You know, I stop running infrastructure on premises, but I run my virtual machines and applications in a similar manner to how I've been doing it traditionally. And there's elements of savings that can come from that, but still you're still responsible for the operating system and above. So there's still, you know, administration costs and management costs associated with doing that. So the quick win is I don't buy hardware anymore, right? But I still got to run my applications. As you start moving up that stack towards platform and software as a service, that's when you start really unlocking the agility around cloud. That's where a lot of the cost savings can come from. That's where you start focusing purely on the application and less on running the underlying infrastructure. And obviously software as a service is the endpoint of that, we assume the app. And so, you know, it's for reasons like that we've seen Office 365 and those sort of services become really, really popular, because I can leapfrog from basically running Exchange on premises straight through to consuming mail as a service and getting some great wins out the other side of that. So we're kind of seeing that this is probably how, you know, an IT strategy is going to play out for the next sort of 10 to 15 years, is how do I sort of move up and further up the stack. Because in the next sort of 10, 15 years, we'll probably be consuming applications as a service. You know, there'll be a lot of companies that have found that, well, there's a number of companies around the world all do the same sort of stuff. I'm going to build an app for that organization, you'll consume it as a service. And we're starting to see that happen already. So that's sort of kind of how we sort of see things playing out moving forward. But in saying that, though, we still believe there's going to be a need for on-premises infrastructure. So this concept of hybrid IT is really going to become the reality moving forward. And so there's a lot of investments that we're starting to make in how we help you run your on-premises infrastructure better and more efficiently by leveraging the learnings that we take from running public cloud platforms like Azure. And so you would have heard yesterday we sort of touched on a product called Azure Stack. And this is essentially bringing the full internals of Azure into your own on-premises infrastructure so that you can deliver the same sort of agility and that sort of stuff as well. But because it's completely consistent with what we're running in the cloud, from a developer perspective, you can build an app and deploy it either way. It's completely consistent. The provisioning experience is exactly the same. So it's the resource manager part of Azure is now brought on premises. So on the Azure side, we obviously run the big global data center infrastructure. On your side, that's powered by Hyper-V, Windows Server, System Center, the tools and technologies you're already using today. You can lay Azure Stack over the top of that and start doing some cool stuff over the top of it. And then you've basically got the same portal experience, same provision experience, so I can deploy apps to either cloud that I like. So this is really now starting to gel, this whole hybrid IT, where it makes public cloud and on-premises really consistent. If you've heard me talk over the last sort of 3 or 4 years here at Microsoft, we sort of talked about this vision of, you know, customer, service provider, and Azure all kind of playing together nicely, and it's all kind of interwoven and really consistent. And to be fair, 3 years ago, that was a bit of architecture. It was a PowerPoint animation that worked really cool, but didn't really do. There was no actual technology sitting behind it. With Azure Stack now, which we'll be delivering out in the first quarter of next year, that really is the first part of how we've really connected the on-premises world with the cloud world together and make it really consistent. So some really cool stuff happening there. You know, I think the industry is validating the approach that we're taking on this as well. So, you know, we're the only public cloud vendor and globally that's the leader in all the magic quadrants from Gartner's perspective around virtualization, public cloud services, platforms of service and SQL and that sort of stuff as well. And also, if you look at the summary of the major vendors and their emphasis, you can see where we're sitting as any vendor that's focused on how we sort of deliver value to your on-premises world and to the public cloud as well. So all of this is really underpinned by, you know, an awful large data center environment. This is the number of regions that we're running globally at the moment. That's 19 that we have. What's been really interesting in delivering these sort of talks over the last 3 years is that I remember when I first started working on Azure, we had 4 data centers in America, we had 2 in Asia, and we had 2 in Europe. And now in that period of time, in the last couple of years, we've deployed into Japan, to Brazil, into Australia most recently. We've now also delivering data centers into India, so we have 3 data centers coming online in India, 2 more in Canada. So that takes up to 24 regions around the world where customers can run their workloads. And why this is really important is because it means we can bring the cloud closer to where our customers are, and in most cases deliver that in country where there may be privacy and compliance reasons why I need to leave information in country. So really helping with latency and that sort of stuff as well. So yeah, really it's this broad technology of data centers around the world that we can operate out of. And if you're interested to know what the cloud actually looks like, it looks like this. This is our one of our flagship data centers in Quincy, which is about 3 hours east of Seattle. Had the pleasure of going here 3 times on the bus. But essentially, while this picture is kind of interesting, it shows the evolution that we've had in terms of how we operate and how we get really, really efficient at running our environments. The trouble we have at the moment is we just keep running out of capacity. In the last 45 days, we've delivered as much compute into our cloud environment as what it took in the first 5 years of Azure itself. So this rate of adoption is epic at the moment. So we've got to get really, really good at how we sort of deploy our infrastructure and scale really, really quickly to meet that demand. So the big white building up the top here is our Generation 2 data center. That's basically a typical data center. If you walk in, it's hot oil containment, it's raised floors, it's just a traditional data center. The trouble is in running that building there, we're in the air conditioning business, we're not in the IT business at all. The power bill for that building is about $1 million a month. Right, so you know we've got to start getting really efficient how we start to deploy things. And so what's here and down here is our Generation 4 data center. Generation 3 was an experiment in Chicago, and we just don't talk about it anymore. but essentially what we've done here is move to this world of almost containerization for the data center itself. So in the first iteration of that was this here, and it's basically like a shipping warehouse full of containers. And then we sort of went one step further and thought, well, it still takes time to build the building, and why do we actually need the building? So let's just not do that anymore. And essentially, this is what it looks like. This is the bottom part of that picture on the previous slide. But essentially, this is the compute inside here. There's about 2,500 servers in that container. This is the cold oil, and that's the hot oil, and it just blows the hot air out the roof. Each one of these is fully self-contained. It can manage its own cooling as required. And essentially, all we need to do is pour a concrete pad, provide network power and cooling, and we're done. So we can rapidly scale out this infrastructure on demand. The containers turned up, pre-packaged, ready to go. We bolt them in, turn them on, and we've provisioned into that environment. Out of interest, this here is what's been delivered in the first 6 months of this year. So you can see each one of these is basically one of that. So that's some pretty big capacity we're running at the moment. About 5 kilometres down the road from here, we've got our Generation 5 data centre, which is taking this one step further. That's when we start moving into essentially availability zones and that sort of stuff, if you're familiar with AWS's concept. Each one of those, there's in that campus, there's 4 zones. Each zone can put 2 787 aircraft inside it, to give you an idea of the scale of things. So it's pretty big. But you know, it just shows the demand. We're having to try and keep on top of that demand. The more efficient we can make this is how we lower our costs and deliver better value to our customers as well. So, and so obviously, you know, compliance and certification and this sort of stuff is really, really important. You know, how we build trust with our customers is something that we take very, very seriously, and that you've got to have a lot of trust in the provider that you're working with, and you're trusting another organization with the information that you run your business with. So we take a lot of effort ensuring that we have full compliance and certification across our platforms. So these sort of ISO and SOC certifications are the typical ones you'd see. This one here is really interesting, the 27018. We're the only public cloud vendor in the world that has a certification, and this is around data privacy. And this is basically says that we've been independently audited by the ISO organisation, that the information that we hold for our customers is only used to provide services for that customer, i.e. we won't use it for advertising purposes, we won't store your data to try and find other things to try and sell you, we only store your data in trust to provide the services back to you that you need. So that, it's a very important certification for us as well. And then we're sort of moving into more regional based ones. From a New Zealand perspective, we've worked with the DIA around the 104 questions. So if any of you are here in government, you will know about this risk assessment guidelines, the 104 questions you've got to go and complete. What we did is we proactively took that document and looked at it and went, well, actually, probably half of these questions relate to the service provider itself. So let's provide those questions for you so that you can just copy and paste those. You only focus on the stuff around data security and your own information. And there's a whole lot of information here for us on the service provider side. And so that document is now published on the Azure Trust Centre website, so you can freely go and download that as well. But we've done the similar type of stuff in Australia with the IRAP certification as well. So you know, we've pretty much got a lot of good certifications on our platform from that perspective. So over the last 12 months, this platform's been increasing in capability massively. The trouble that I have is trying to understand what's going on here as well, let alone all you guys as well. But really what it's showing is the amount of innovation that's going into this platform. You know, this is one of the big bets from Microsoft, as you will hear a lot about. And so trying to bring out new features and capabilities that our customers need in a regular cadence. I think we're on a cadence around every 6 weeks we're bringing new features and new capabilities to market on the Azure platform. You know, one of our customers that we worked with a couple of years ago, as we were going through the 12-month project, new features were coming up that were unblocking issues that we had in part of the deployment. It was just happening that fast. And in most cases, it's hard for you to sort of put a stake in the ground and say, well, I'm going to make a decision based on what you've got on the store today, because in 6 weeks' time, it's all going to change again, right? So in a lot of ways, it's sort of you're making sort of a step in the right direction moving forward, and then the features will come in off the back of that as well. So we've had some really great momentum here in New Zealand with the Azure platform over the past few years as well. Here's a number of our customers are doing some really neat stuff with our platform. You heard yesterday around VMob. You know, that's Kiwi ISV achieving massive success globally. VMob just won a big project with McDonald's in Japan. By us having data centers in Japan, they can deploy the application into the Japan region for the Japan users as well, so it's been great for them. You know, Treasury's done some great stuff with us. Hamilton City Council, just recently we've done a data center migration to Azure. They're running Dynamics AX, a number of other key Anonymous applications. And also, you know, Zespri is one that you may have heard of before. We've done a really big project with these guys about a year or so ago around SAP. And this is just a little video that talks sort of about their journey that they've had with us.
New Zealand Kiwifruit Growers created Zespri in order to brand and market their kiwifruit to consumers around the world. We're now selling kiwifruit 365 days a year. And our customers are major retailers around the world. There is no such thing as not being able to deliver. That means that business continuity is the baseline for being in business.
Zespri are heavily reliant on SAP as a line of business ERP system. If SAP is not highly available, then fruit sits on docks and fruit perishes.
The Bay of Plenty region, which is where we're based on Mount Maunganui, has a number of potentials for natural disaster.
When we looked at our vulnerability to that, it became very clear that we needed multiple sites around the world with really sophisticated data recovery technology in place.
The opportunities that we've taken through our cloud strategy is to make sure that critical applications are available to anyone within our business, all around the world. All of our on-premise SAP and production workloads have been moved to the Microsoft Azure platform. And the performance has been great.
We chose Azure for a number of reasons. Zespri are a global organization, and we were looking for a spread of data centers all around the world.
The reality is that we can now move our workloads around where we want. This will help us to manage our costs more effectively, allow us to be more agile, and to change the way we operate. We are focused now on adding value. It's about enabling our business to look at new and varied innovation, create value for growers and shareholders and deliver the best outcome we can to our consumers. By running SAP and Azure, we can focus on growing and selling kiwi fruit, and we're happy to meet Microsoft and our partner Datacom manage our IT infrastructure so we can scale with analytics.
Our business, the fruit business, is based on long-term partnerships, and that's why we're so excited about working with Microsoft in the cloud space.
Yeah, it's quite a good story that we've got with Wizzy Esprit, and they, I guess this was the first significant commercial public cloud project delivered in New Zealand. I think we look at the scale of what we did with these guys. But what it really shows is, I think, really good validation that public cloud's really ready for prime time. There's been a lot of sort of talk about, well, I don't really want to take my mission critical workloads to the cloud, it's a bit unknown. I might start with my dev environment and move forward. You know, Andrew Gooden was one of these guys who went, well, why can't I? Right, so he's achieved some really great success off the back of that. So we're running pretty much their entire infrastructure now. The SAP deployment is based out of the West US in America. Their DR site is in East US. They've got a big operation out of Europe, so we're able to place the European applications into the European region as well. Prior to that, everybody was coming back to Mount Maunganui. And the trouble that he had from an IT perspective was all the Europeans were hating the performance of it, so they were starting to run off and do their own thing from an IT perspective. So there's a lot of shadow IT starting to happen. He felt he was starting to lose control of IT around the world. By moving towards the Azure platform, they've now been able to place workloads closer to where the users are, where they need it, and the performance has gone up, and they've got some really great outcomes off the other side of it. Also, it means now they're focusing on the business side and not about running IT. So there's been some really great learnings that we've had with these guys, but you know, it's really good validation that we can do these sort of projects. And that's, I guess, where Hamilton City Council kind of went as well. We're sort of doing, well, we want to do something similar to that. Data center move, and we've actually moved the whole lot into Sydney, so they're running out of Sydney at the moment as well, which is pretty cool. So just in terms of the platform itself. One thing we talk about is infrastructure service, platforms of service, and that's, I guess, one of the big value props around the Azure platform is we do provide both these capabilities in the same platform. So when we think about infrastructure service, you know, a lot of us already know what that kind of means. It's compute, network, and storage delivered as a service, right? So I can have my Windows and Linux virtual machines. We're now starting to support containers as well, Windows Server containers. There's a whole bunch of storage capability we have here as well around traditional storage and SSD-based high-performance storage, and then a whole swag of different networking capabilities off the other side of it. So when you think about moving to IAAS, yeah, it's a virtual machine as a service. You know, there's nothing really special about that. In terms of the platform, then what we start doing is wrapping up some other services around this. So there's a lot of effort we're putting into security and management. So obviously leveraging things like Azure Active Directory, multi-factor authentication to ensure that only the people that should have access can have access to the environment. A lot of things we're starting to do around automation to make it easier and quicker for you to do things. The Azure Marketplace, which I'll show you shortly, and the VM Gallery is basically a whole lot of pre-packaged images ready to go. So you don't have to start building images from scratch. You can take advantage of some pre-popular ones already in Azure. You can bring your own virtual machine image if you want to. Generally, though, most people tend to deploy new as opposed to uploading 127 gig VHD, but it can be done. But the hybrid stuff is something that we're really focusing on too. And it's, so how we start to sort of extend your data center and make us an extension of you. Now, some of the things that we've been doing here is around StoreSimple, around storage. So for those that don't know about StoreSimple, it's essentially it's an on-premises SAN that's connected to the cloud. The idea being is that when that local SAN starts to reach capacity, it will then tear off the older data into Azure automatically. That data is all encrypted with encryption keys that you own. So essentially, you can scale out on demand rather than buying more storage and scaling up a traditional SAN. If you look at an 80-20 rule around storage, the 20%, the data that's accessed most frequently, stays on premises, but the data that's aged and older can be moved in the cloud where it's, you know, 3 cents a gig for storage and that sort of stuff. So around hybrid cloud storage, we've seen a lot of success of that product here in New Zealand. And a product starting to get a lot more attention now is Azure Site Recovery. This is essentially how we start to provide DR as a service. This technology can actually do a number of different things. One, it can actually do the orchestration between your two local data centers if you have such. But a lot of organizations today don't really have a good DR strategy because it's kind of hard and expensive. So most don't have the luxury of being able to have two data centers that are replicated and that sort of thing. With Azure Site Recovery, what we're able to do is provide Azure as your secondary data center and then replicate those images and those virtual machines to the cloud. We can then orchestrate the failover, we can boot up those VMs in the cloud, you manage that failover, and we can get to near zero RPO in terms of how we do the replication and that sort of stuff. This is a technology called Image that we acquired about a year and a half ago now. So it's an industry-proven technology. We just made it really, really easy for you now to take advantage of things like Azure for disaster recovery. That gets really cost effective because all you're paying for is storage. You only pay for the virtual machines when you actually fail over and boot them up. You can also test it at any time. That's one of the big things we have around disaster recovery is my test planning is kind of tricky because I kind of don't really do it. And I kind of hope it's just going to work when I do a failover. With Azure Site Recovery, you can essentially just schedule that at any time and test it whenever you feel like. You pause replication, boot up the images in Azure, run those, validate it's working, shut it back down again, commence replication and carry on. So we can prove that at any time, which is a lot of organisations just love. So there's a couple of talks later this week on Azure Site Recovery, which you might want to go and check out. But yeah, just to show you what some of this looks like. From a VM perspective. So here's the new Azure portal that we're moving to at the moment. As you can see, this dashboard can actually be customized in a number of different ways, which is quite nice. Mine's very basic, so I don't really do much with it. But you know, this here is an example of how far you can take that that start screen. You can fully customize it, have role-based access, and say, here's an application that I run, and I want this to be my monitoring screen for this application. And this is actually the Office Blogs website running on Azure. And this is their service dashboard they have. So we can, there's a lot of different widgets you can do. You can pin those to the start screen, customize it any way you like. Very cool. So you can see here, I've got a map of the world and I've got my service health dashboard. So I'm seeing that Azure's all green around the world. And it looks like we've just gone and put a data center to Pitcairn Island in the middle of nowhere. Kind of cool. We're going everywhere. But you know, in terms of the virtual machines, from a compute perspective. We have the Windows Server and the sort of stuff you'd think of as well. A lot of these three or four Linux distros that we support as well. But in the marketplace, there's actually a whole bunch of other partners that we're dealing with here. So what you're able to do is basically go in here and pick an image and run it. If you just wanted to compute one, there's Cloudera, there's Ubuntu. If you want to build a data stats cluster, you can do so. If you want to run up Dynamics AX, R3 and ever play with it, you can do so. And then from a Databoist perspective, we've got things like SQL Server. We've also got Oracle and IBM sitting here. So these sort of things are getting really interesting now, where the partnerships that we're building with, you know, what traditionally been quite big competitors of ours, is now a lot of competition that we're working with too. So you can go off and build yourself an Oracle database, and you know, there's a whole Oracle stack is all fully supported on there as well. It's just really easy to sort of get yourself going. If I wanted to build a Windows Server, I've got a number of different images sitting here. For those of you that aren't really sure what this whole container thing means with Windows Server containers and how I'm going to do that, if you've got an Azure subscription where you can go and sign up for a free trial, you can go and build yourself a Windows Server container enabled on it and start having a play for free. I can just basically choose an edition of Windows Server that I want. It's just a few clicks and I've gone off and provisioned that virtual machine. So it's just things like configuring some basic settings in terms of the name and password that I want for that. The VM. And then I can do things like choose the location around the world where I want that VM to live. The subscription I'm going to use for it. And then we've got a whole gallery of different, So there's a whole gallery of different virtual machine sizes that we have available when the website loads. And essentially we've got basically different performance virtual machines. So there'll be A series, D series, and G series. So A series are basically our standard virtual machines, pretty basic. The D series that we brought out have a high performance CPU. We've got local SSD for high performance. The DS series can then be connected to our premium storage and that sort of stuff. And then we've got our G series VMs, which are basically a big grunty virtual machine. So like any good cooking show, here's a VM I prepared earlier. And this one's officially known as Godzilla. This VM is kind of interesting because it's actually the largest virtual machine that you can provision in the public cloud today. This is actually a 32-core, half a terabyte VM. As you can see, it's not really doing much because it's got heaps of CPU in it. It costs about $8,000 a month to run it full time, so I encourage all of you to go and provision at least one of them. And then we'll do a number for the year, so it'll be great. But yes, yeah, so this is, you know, basically now within the library of VMs that we have, there's basically no VM that we can't run that can't run a workload. But you know, the nice thing about having access to this sort of stuff is that this is charged per minute. So if you wanted to do some really big stress test on a big workload and you just don't have the capacity on premises to do so, then you can leverage something like this for a day and it costs you a couple $100. Right? And there's not often that we get the chance to sort of provision up infrastructure like this. We can also pin this VM to some premium storage, and we can deliver up to about a terabyte of storage, about 80,000 IOPS with sub 1 second latency on that disk. So when you sort of pair big CPU with really high performance disks, there's literally nothing we can't do now on the public cloud. So yeah, some pretty cool stuff. So around sort of other sessions this week, if you haven't got your schedule fully built yet, there's a number of sessions that we've got focusing on infrastructure service. So later this morning, Steve Letford and Stu Fox are going to be doing a real deep dive into infrastructure service. So I've just, you know, glossed over the top of terms of what you can do. They've got a whole session at 11:55 this morning. On Wednesday afternoon, Clive from Treasury is going to take you through building a complete IWS environment in less than an hour. So he's going to take you through the entire process that you can use to build up, you know, typical application. And then it's a choice between that one or Brett from Datacom is doing a session on running mission critical workloads in Azure. So if you're thinking about, you know, tier one applications, what they may look like, then he's running a session on some of the things to be sort of aware of and how you can do that sort of stuff as well. And then on Thursday, Donovan from Provote is going to be doing a whole session on storage. There's a lot of stuff that we can do with storage today, so he's going to do a session specifically on that, around how you can get the most out of things like premium storage and those sort of things. So yeah, system relevant sessions there you might be interested in as well. So we've sort of touched on the infrastructure service, but really where we see the biggest value out of public cloud is actually getting above that into the platform services. And these are a selection of the platform services that we offer on Azure today. And what essentially these are finished services, just things that you can take advantage of, get really time quick to value, and I don't have to manage infrastructure in the back end, I just worry about my application. So, you know, some of the things we're doing around compute is things like Azure Batch, which you saw Dave Fellow's demo yesterday. One thing I'm not sure whether it really came through in that keynote was how quickly he was able to spin up all of those cores. And that little chart that he showed, I don't know if you remember, and it showed the servers all coming off and going white again. If you want to notice that quickly, it all sort of went all green really, really quick. And so that was spinning up, I don't know how many D13s he had, but you know, it was an epic amount of cores that he provisioned basically instantaneously, right? And so a lot of stuff we've done with the Resource Manager platform in Azure enables us to basically, you know, say I want to spin up 135 D13 VMs now, and it just goes off and does it. So some really cool stuff we're doing there. Remote app is another interesting one. This is essentially RDS as a service. So if you're doing remote desktop services today, you run RDS infrastructure or Citrix infrastructure on premises, and there's a whole lot of infrastructure you run, and it's kind of hard to manage, and it takes up a lot of time and effort, and it's expensive. Remote app essentially is that delivered as a service. So essentially we run all the infrastructure in the back end. You can bring your own image. There's actually a gallery image in Azure VMs where you can actually build that in Azure itself. You package up your image, you deploy on a remote app, and your users can access that from any device they like just through an ADP client. You know, this has been really interesting because, again, it's really quick time to value. I don't have to worry about managing an RDS infrastructure anymore. We actually scale the back end for you, and you pay per user per month. And I think it works out about $30 a month per user at a top level. the most that you pay for delivering that. So we're seeing some customers sort of take advantage of that already to get some really quick wins on how they sort of deliver a certain application to users without having to build up infrastructure anymore. So, you know, the platforms of service stuff doesn't have to be things like I'm a developer and I want to run a web app. There's a whole lot of other stuff that we can do here as well. Things around developer services like application insights, so I can start getting insight into what's actually going on within my application really easily. A whole lot of stuff we're doing around data, SQL database as a service. There's a whole lot of other relational databases that we offer that's not just Microsoft as well in this world. The analytics and IoT, that's a big hot topic now in terms of how organisations start to make sense of the data that they own. So I've got all this information, I don't really know what to do with it. You know, things like machine learning and that sort of stuff makes it really, really easy for us to tap into that data, start making sense of it and delivering back value to the business. Stream analytics and that sort of stuff is some quite interesting stuff here as well. Media services, you know, video encoding and streaming as a service. If you ever watched the Sochi Olympics last year online, all that was delivered off the Azure Media Services platform in the back end as well. So some really interesting stuff that we can do there. So just to show you what some of this actually looks like and just how, hopefully the portal's going to play ball with me this time. It was all working for the old classic thing. It was working fine 10 minutes ago. So, you know, again, where are we? So this here is a simple web application. It took, you know, literally 5 minutes to set up. If you've got your phone out, you can actually go to the site yourself. But this is just a really basic website. It's a database and a website, right? All running on Azure, doing some really cool stuff. What's interesting about this is that if I and Jetstar faced this on Monday, I think they announced all the new flights that they're going to be coming to the regions around New Zealand. Went, hey, you're going to get a $9 fare. Went to the website crashed. And generally what happens is because there's just not enough web server capacity provision, right? So they go, I think I'm going to have this many people at my website. I'll build the server for this. It turns out to be here. Server can't handle it. Server falls over, right? We see it happen an awful lot. What we can do with Azure and the websites is actually scale this. And so at the moment, this website's set up to run one instance, right? But I actually have the option here to change this. So I can actually say, actually don't run one. I want to run on one at a minimum, up to 10 web servers if I need to. And I want to run my web servers between 21 and maybe 67% CPU utilization. So what we're going to do is start monitoring the performance of that website. When that first web server starts getting up to the 67% utilization, it will spin up a second one, load balance automatically, the load gets spread, the performance comes down, more load comes up, another website gets spun up, and then as demand falls off and the utilization starts dropping, it deprovisions the VMs in the back end for you automatically. So now I can just basically click this button, go save, and now this website's automatically going to scale up to 10 instances for me. I don't have to worry about performance anymore. I get to see the performance of my website and that sort of stuff, but I don't have to worry about managing the server infrastructure in the back end to take care of that for me anymore. There's also different size websites that we can run, and it all depends on what you need. So if you just wanted a really basic website, you can almost do it for free on Azure today. It'll give you 1 gig of backend storage and off you go. But really, depending on what you need from that website, you can actually scale the thing up. And you can go all the way up to sort of a premium database that will give you the ability to scale up to 20 instances if you want to. A whole lot of backup automatically built in for you. So this is the other thing about how we start to backup our websites and that sort of stuff. Essentially, with this one here, I can schedule up to 50 backups a day, constantly going on. So if something happens, I can roll back really, really quickly. Again, that's all a managed service for you as well. Traffic Manager enables me to now deploy websites around the world and then have Traffic Manager managing the routing for that. So we can do that based on performance or we can basically do it on availability. So I could have my website in Australia and in West US. If Australia fell over, everyone gets redirected to West US. So some cool stuff we can do there from the web front end on the websites. And also it's really easy. You know, it's just a couple of clicks on the mouse and I've now got my website to automatically scale for me on demand. And then from the database backend, I can do some other interesting stuff about replication and that sort of thing. So in this demo, we've just got the database sitting in Sydney, and he's all kind of happy. But I'm kind of not that happy about it, all my databases being in one basket in one region. And so what we offer is ability to do geo-replication. And so if I want to set up another replica of that database somewhere else to maintain availability, I can do so, and I can just pretty much pick any one of our data centers around the world, and it will automatically start replicating that. So if I really did feel like it, I could put this data, my secondary database into Ireland, configure a couple of things, save it, and now the system's going to automatically replicate that database in the back end to Ireland for me. So, you know, these things get really easy for us to do now. You know, we could actually build a replicated database, a web front end of two regions as well, have traffic manager over the front of it, everything replicated, and if Sydney fell over, everyone just runs out of Europe until Sydney's back up online again. If the database has been updated, the replication's going to come back again, and we're all good. So, you know, this is the real power, I think, of what cloud services can do, is when we start getting to this part of the platform, where you get real quick time to value. But if you think about how long it would take me to try and do something like this in a traditional sense, you know, even just building a web server can take time. You know, if we look at how quickly we can build a website, again, it's just going to be a few clicks of the mouse. So if I go rocks, and so this the app service plan basically just gives us the ability to choose just some basic configuration, and again, just choose up the size of data of the website that I want for whatever I need. Hit select. Okay. And create. And that's basically going to go off and build my website. Now, what we're actually doing in the back end while that's provisioning is we have created two virtual machines. We're deploying the code onto those virtual machines. We're setting up the load balancers, all the routing for those as well, connecting together, providing an external endpoint that you can connect to all automatically. Now, if you think about how long it would take you to try and do the same thing on premises today, we'll still be going through what the requirements were, get my IP address sorted out, get my database stuff sorted out, get my web server set up, get my routing, my firewall port set, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then we'll actually start going it. And then it could take me half an hour to provision the VM. Then I've got to do another one. Then I've got to set up load balancing. You know, all those steps that you go through, whereas with this, it's literally just a few clicks of the mouse, and the system's going to deploy that. And that's basically now ready to go. So if you've got your phone, you can go to that website. It's not going to show anything because I haven't deployed anything. So just be a splash page. But essentially, that's my web app. Now from here, I could go to Visual Studio, upload or FTP my website onto that, refresh it, and I'm done. You know, so this sort of stuff is really, really cool in terms of how we're able to do that. And then in the back end, I'm going to start getting some availability error and that's sort of data and that sort of stuff about the performance, the number of hits I'm getting to my website. All that will start coming through in real time as well. So yeah, they're just touching on a couple of things again, but it's you know, this is really the powerful stuff, I think, around how we can start leveraging the cloud to do things better and faster and more agile and that sort of thing. So in terms of getting started, this is often the first question that gets asked by a lot of our customers. So we'll do a discussion similar to what we've been doing now, and the question will be, well, this all sounds great, but where on earth do I start? And so generally, if you think about your IT environment today, we can kind of carve it up into a bit of a pie like this. And if you look at the services here, about 50% of that infrastructure is non-prod stuff. There's development environments, sampling environments, all that sort of stuff. That tends to be, there's a lot of it, and it's a lot of stuff lying around, and it costs money to run it. There's never enough when we need it, and when we don't need it, there's too much capacity being wasted and that sort of stuff. So the utilization is really, really low. The nice thing about this is that you can have some really good impactful benefits really, really quickly, and the ROI comes up, but it's less risky. So we've often seen that, you know, development environments are kind of the first ones to go up, the exception of like the Zespri's and HCC's and those guys, but generally speaking, development tends to be the first one. The interesting thing is what I'm seeing with this is kind of the journey we went on virtualization. When virtualization came up, it was like, oh, dude, I don't want to virtualize my production environment. oh, we'll go and virtualize those development servers and we'll try that, and then that worked, and then we could try something else. And we're actually starting to see the same thing starting to play out with public cloud. We'll give it a go with development. It's not risky. It's, you know, if something happens, it doesn't break anything. And as we build confidence, we'll start looking further back towards production. So that tends to be where we're starting from. Then the next part is things about like SaaS applications and access to these products, which is where's some of the stuff that we can stop doing some things and get quicker time to value out of that. Next is Office 365. Then there's sort of 10% or so is around new applications. So these are sort of things where we can use a PaaS platform. And then there's basically everything else that's left over at the end of it. That tends to be the stuff that we leave to very last. As you can see, there's an awful lot of other stuff that we can be doing here as well. So, you know, in terms of how we start on this journey, you know, connectivity is obviously a something that we need. If I just move my head out of the way. So, you know, from a connection point of view, you can do an SSL VPN to the cloud, and that's really, really easy. But as we start doing more and more, having a sort of a decent pipe to the cloud is kind of important. And so we have a product called ExpressRoute, which is a dedicated MPLS connection to the cloud. You can choose different bandwidths from, you know, 10 meg up to 10 gig if you want to. And these are our providers here in New Zealand that all offer this service today. So no doubt all of you work with at least one of these organisations in some way, shape or form. They can all provide the ExpressRoute service for you as well. So we start thinking about development environments, and the, you know, one of the big misconceptions that we see around Azure is, well, it's a Microsoft product, therefore it must be great for Microsoft tools and that. But I'm an open source guy, I run Linux, I build LAMP applications, so I might go and look somewhere else. There's actually no reason why you can't do that with us. You know, a lot of the open source stuff is all first party support on our platform. So no matter what development language you like to build in, we can support you quite happily on the platform. Then we've got our operating systems over the top of it. We love Linux today. There's a guy running with stickers as well if you really want one for your laptop. But yeah, Windows Server, Linux distros as well. We have the Oracle VM images as well. And then the VM Depot essentially is our open source library of images in the open source community that are all prepackaged, ready to go, that you can take advantage of. And then we've got the preview of Server 2016 and containers sitting up there as well that you can use. Databases, so SQL supported obviously, Oracle, IBM DB2 is also up there as well if you want to give those a go. And then a lot of the open source databases all fully supported up with us as well. And then in terms of how we start to deploy and manage the stuff, Chef and Puppet support. We've also got a great relationship with Docker for the containers and that sort of stuff that's coming through as well. And you know, PowerShell is your best friend when it comes to doing sort of the really good stuff in Azure. You know, I was sort of bouncing around the portal, but to be fair, the portal is not really where you want to be in terms of when you do some really interesting stuff with the platform. So PowerShell is definitely your friend, and there's a few sessions we've got going on this week around PowerShell and its capabilities in the cloud world as well. So when you think about, you know, those big development environments, it's kind of taking a smorgasbord of all this sort of stuff. It's all fully supported, and you can really take advantage of that. Some other stuff we're doing with Linux recently was supporting support for Linux, which means that if you're running a Linux image and you're having some issues with it and you're in Microsoft support, we will actually help you. So that's something new that's come through recently as well. So another point was about how you access packages and SaaS applications. And this is getting really interesting now. As software as a service is getting more and more popular and more organizations taking advantage of it, it's becoming a bit of a nightmare to try and manage it, right? We've got multiple devices, all trying to connect to on-premise infrastructure, people running around with different credentials, and I'm kind of starting to lose control of it. If you were an organization that used all of these SaaS applications here, odds are for every one of those, you've got a different login for it. And that's becoming an epic nightmare from a security perspective, because it just gets really, really hard. You know, what if someone leaves the organization? I no longer have access, they may still have access to my Salesforce accounts, for example, because I've got no, my provisioning and deprovisioning process is pretty average and that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of work that we've put into this to make it really, really easy. And a lot of this is underpinned by Azure Active Directory. So we have a nice, simple way that we can replicate your on-premises directory to the cloud. There's a number of ways that authentication can take place. So you can either do, you know, password sync and that sort of stuff, or you could use ADFS, or just not do it and have the customer log, the user log in again. But essentially, it's all very familiar to how you're sort of managing your directory today, because your on-premises directory should always be the single source of truth, right? You shouldn't end up having other ones lying around. So any updates that are made on-premises get replicated to the cloud. And then from there on in, we have connections to a whole number of third-party SaaS applications that you can then connect to. We can do things like AppProxy, which is provides secure access to an on-premises infrastructure. So today, if I've got mobile users running around, I may have to VPN to be able to access an on-premises application. VPNs don't often work properly. It's kind of hard to manage again, security risks and that sort of stuff. With the AppProxy service, all that authentication is done in Azure AD. It's then an inside-out connection from the on-premises world back to the application and enables the user to log into that application really, really easy. So to give you a quick view in terms of what that looks like from a... from a user perspective, is essentially I go to a website. Now, this website could be built into a SharePoint site in your intranet, for example. There's also apps on your iPhone and thing Android as well. I've got it as well. This is My Apps app. So I simply go to this website, and it will ask me to log in. So like any good Microsoft demo, I work for Contoso. Hopefully. And we also offer up this ability to do customized branding and that sort of stuff. So when the user logs in, it comes up familiar to what my organization may look like. What we can also do at that point is implement multi-factor authentication. So as you saw in the demo at the keynote, my phone would ring or I get a text message or I've got an app that I can authenticate against as my two-factor. And then I basically have, what's happened here? If I'd done something. Froze it for some reason. There you go. Basically, I'd log in and then I get a dashboard of my applications. And so, what I've done is logged in with my corporate credentials. I haven't had to log in with a different one. And then, if I want to access any one of these applications, I simply just click on the tile. What this is kind of interesting is I don't need to know what the password is. We're managing all that in the background. You know, doing things like Twitter is kind of interesting because having access to social media accounts from an organization perspective tends to be I'm in the marketing department, I know the Twitter handle and the password for the Twitter account for the organization, and so do the four other people in the marketing team, and it's on a sticky note on my computer. And then I leave the organization disgruntled and I still have access to a Twitter account and I start tweeting on behalf of the organization. Right? We've seen this happen a lot before. In this world here, I log in with my corporate credentials. I have access to Twitter because I'm part of the Twitter user group inside AD, for example. I then have access to Twitter. If I leave the organization, my account's disabled in AD, I no longer have access to this. It's a really easy way that we can manage that. And this happens for there's around 2,500 different SaaS applications that we can integrate with. Some are very simple in terms of keeping the password in Azure AD, like the Twitter example here. Other ones have really deep integration, like Salesforce, where the whole user provisioning process can actually take place automatically as well for you too, which is pretty cool. Managing identity in the cloud, really, really important. But this thing makes it really easy for our users to connect to the applications they want and for IT to manage the security and the connections of those applications really securely as well. So new business applications, as we sort of touched on before, you know, the platform as a service is definitely where we want to be, and so that's why we're spending a lot of time with the developer community, sort of showing them the potential that can come from leveraging the platform as a service capability. So I won't sort of touch on that for too much now. And then, you know, you've got your existing customer applications, the stuff that's all left over. You know, in general, we kind of leave those alone for now. As you can see, there's an awful lot of other stuff that we can be working on to help realize value out of the business without taking your most mission-critical workload and using that as the first one to move to the cloud. But there are a couple of exceptions to that. You know, perhaps there's an environment where your hardware refresh cycles come up. And this is one thing that's coming up quite common at the moment, where I need to refresh the hardware I've got. I look at the environment that I have and kind of go, well, out of that infrastructure I'm running today, there's a percentage of that are good candidates for the cloud. I might move those to Azure Virtual Machines, keep the rest on premises. I just don't buy as much server infrastructure anymore. And so there's a bit of a cost out that we can do from reducing the size of the data center footprint that you're running today. Maybe there's some low usage applications that only get used really infrequently. At the moment, they're all sitting, taking up space and consuming resources on my internal infrastructure. Perhaps I can move those up to the cloud and just turn them off, and I only turn them on when I need to. We did an interesting project with Foodstuffs around this with the SAP development and training environments. And there was also another environment which was an old legacy SAP environment that finance needed access to, but they only ever look at it maybe two or three times a year. And so what we've done is basically taken that, moved it to Azure, configured it all, and then shut it down. And we provisioned a nice little web page that's got two buttons on it. It's got a green button and a red button. And the finance team go to this web page, hit the red button, the green button, in the background a script runs, boots up all the infrastructure. They can access the SAP environment as they need to. When they're finished, they go back to the web page, hit the red button, it turns all back off again. So really paying for what they use. And then the training environments is another one where the training happens every couple of months. So I just shut my training environment down or boot it up when I need to. So there's some really nice ways that we can manage costs there across that environment too. And then the last one is sort of thinking about high bursts and kind of unpredictable applications are really great candidates for a cloud. In a similar way to what I showed you with the websites, we can do that auto scale with virtual machines as well. So there's one project with a customer working on around a SharePoint environment where the web front end of SharePoint goes through a peak load during the day, then all falls off at night. And traditionally, we would build that for peak and then run it like that all the time. What we're able to do is with the auto scale on virtual machine to say, at 7 o'clock in the morning, scale up to 4 VMs, run until 7 o'clock at night, then scale down to 2. And just automate that process. So they can manage their cost base a lot easier in tracking that against the actual utilization. So you know, these are some of the exceptions of where we are seeing some customers taking advantage of these sort of legacy apps and that sort of stuff as well. So just some other related sessions that you might be interested in off the back of my talk this morning. Emil's going to be running a couple of sessions on Azure networking. So if you want to sort of have a deep dive into the networking capabilities of Azure, head on to his session on Thursday morning. And then the afternoon, he's doing a whole session on Azure Resource Manager, which is the new way that we manage the provisioning of virtual machine infrastructure in Azure. We've got a whole session on running Linux and the open source aspect of things on our platform. We've got James from VIFX doing a session on Azure Site Recovery and sort of specifically around, you know, that's a cross-platform product too, by the way. So if you've got a VMware site today, you can use that to replicate to Azure quite happily. The guys are doing a session on backup of the services, basically, you know, Azure Backup that we offer, Store Simple and those sort of things are some other sessions you could go to. And then finally, we've got a session on Operations Management Suite, which is our new cloud-based monitoring tool that's coming to market at the moment. The guys are talking about the experience of running that at Massey University and the success they got from there. So, yeah, just to recap, sort of touch through the Azure platform and some of its big capabilities. Touched on some of the features of the platform and then sort of showed you some ways to get started. So yeah, I trust that you've found the session informative and got a lot out of it.